The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we are going to answer an email we received regarding a 60-day rollover. We're also going to then discuss costly mistakes on inherited IRAs. The rules are very unique on inherited IRAs. Typically, we see a lot of the common IRA mistakes made with these inherited IRAs. Then if we've got time, we're going to talk about, or at least discuss the question, are IRA losses deductible? So that'll be today's show here on the Retirement and IRA Show. My name's Chris. I'm here with Jim. Just the two of us today. No guest speakers.
Just the two of us. Isn't that a song?
It is. It just suddenly came to mind.
Just the two of us. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to keep singing?
Might be a one-man show next week if I win the Powerball.
Oh, you're going to quit? You think $650 million to $700 million is enough to retire on?
It'll be a little heavy for me to carry around, so I need to start lifting weights and stuff. So
you might not be able to retire on $700 million.
Well, you really don't get that. I think no. if you take the cash payment, you'll end up with about $300 million.
After taxes, you end up with about $3 million.
Yeah. Yeah. So still, I think after I'd be out of here.
You're done?
Probably.
Should I start hanging out a help wanted sign, or wait to the drawing?
No, I'll hire somebody for you. I'll just hire away Rush Limbaugh's producer or somebody to come in and take care of the show for you.
Cool. All right. With $300 million, you could probably do that.
Exactly.
No problem.
Powerball this week's. We don't talk about Powerball much.
So
on
by
this
time
show.
This plays, you this could already be a millionaire.
This is not a retirement
when's
planning
the drawing?
Strategy tonight.
So you could be by time this plays, you could already be a multimillionaire.
Correct.
You'd be hanging out with Warren Buffett.
I don't know about that. I'll certainly make the phone call right after I win. He'd be somebody I'd like to talk to.
Hey, Warren, what do I do?
Hey, Warren. You want to be partners?
Mention my name. He'll take the call.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I get it. Trust me. Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, besides dreaming of Powerball riches, what else is new?
Had a fabulous viewing of the eclipse on Monday.
That's right. How was that?
It was truly amazing. Amazing is probably not strong enough a word.
Good
it
deal.
Is. If a person ever has the chance to see a total eclipse, it's a whole different experience than even a 99.9% eclipse. Once you get to 100%, the world changes in a very beautiful way. It is spectacular.
And how was the traffic on the way home?
That was equally spectacularly bad.
They had it on the news of everyone leaving Wyoming.
Yeah.
It's like all you guys decided to leave at once.
Yes, and I...
On a little two-lane highway. I don't get it.
Well, it's four lanes. I-25's...
Well, it's only two lanes in one direction.
Two in one direction, yeah. 10.5 hours home from Casper.
And it normally takes...
Three.
Yeah, that'd be traffic. Mm-hmm. What, were people just so many, or they were still idiots stopping and taking pictures of moose on the side of the road or something?
No moose or anything, but clearly if all the cars would just go, the highway could handle a lot of cars. There just takes a few...
Lallygagglers.
Yeah, somebody or a camper that can't make it up the hill as fast as everybody else, and it just backs everything up. It was... I knew it was going to be bad. That part was worse than I expected because I thought we were going to beat the big crush, but we got stuck right in the middle of it. So,
and you didn't want to stay an extra day?
Well, I had to teach the next morning, and I was worried if anything went wrong that I wouldn't make it. So we just bit the bullet. I did recommend, after we were into it for about 2 hours, I suggested we turn around and then come back maybe really late at night. In the middle of the night or really early in the morning.
Leave at 1 in the morning.
And I'm not blaming my wife, but she resisted that suggestion.
So did you make her drive for the next 7 hours?
No, 8.5 hours after that, we finally got home. So we did get home, though, and I got to sleep in my own bed, which was more comfortable than the alternative. So I guess there's some upside.
No, I hate traffic. I would have done what you did, turn around, and I'd have drove home either 4 in the morning and come straight to work for 8. Or left at midnight and be home at 3 and go to bed.
Yeah, once midnight rolled around, things had cleared out up there, and you could have made it in about normal time.
Yeah, that's what I would have done.
Yeah. So that part wasn't that great, but the eclipse itself, I don't regret going up there, even knowing the traffic. I would certainly approach the traffic differently next time, but since Wyoming's not going to see another eclipse in my lifetime, I won't be there to be trapped again.
One of our iTunians came out from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And remember, because he asked and you had told him to take 85.
That got pretty busy, too.
I'm wondering how he did. He told me he was going to leave at 5 in the morning to head up there. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he ever factored in, because he only asked me, what time should I leave in the morning? I bet you he got stuck in traffic on the way home as well.
Depends on what direction. Maybe he was continuing north on his journey or something.
No, I think he was coming back to Denver to fly out of DIA.
If he was coming back to Denver, it would have been a struggle.
Even on 85?
On 85. 85 was backed up as well.
Wow. So he got stuck. And I'll have to reach out to him and see how he did. Okay. Well, we don't mean to waste too much of our iTunian listeners' time, but that was Chris and I reminiscing about the total eclipse of the sun that happened in Wyoming, where Chris grew up. Chris grew up in a little hick town called Casper, Wyoming. Mm-hmm. And you guys had 100% coverage there.
100% little old Casper. 2.5 minutes.
Little old Casper. Yeah. 2.5 minutes of pure heavenly bliss, 10.5 hours of human-caused traffic.
Correct.
Doesn't quite sound worth it, but...
Well, it was. I'm sure. It's hard to explain in words, and even pictures don't do it justice.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was one of the easily top three natural phenomena on the planet that I've seen. There are certain things that are just truly awe-inspiring and amazing. The Grand Canyon.
Hosting this radio show.
I don't know if this is a natural phenomena, but it's it's top three easy.
Good.
Easy, maybe number one.
Well, maybe I'll head. There's going to be another one in 7 years. Maybe I'll
be back east. So you have to head back east.
Head back east.
You have to wait 28 years for it to be back around here.
But see, I will do it differently. I will find a town, stay in the town, have a hotel in said town, stay right there, watch it, pay like $400 for a single bed, and not deal with traffic.
That would be good.
Yeah. Okay. So welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, folks. A couple of housekeeping items. We have a few more weeks of a two-hour show in Colorado. I just met with the radio station yesterday, Chris, at my typical meeting location, Starbucks. And I met with...
I thought you meet at Austin's.
No, I didn't make Brady drive all the way to... Normally, we meet at Austin's when it comes to Fort Collins, but I had to meet with someone not far from Johnstown, and he lives in Greeley, so I cut him some slack.
Sure.
Said, meet me at Starbucks at I-25 and 34. So we met there, and I signed the new contract with the radio station. We will officially be going to 1 hour in Northern Colorado beginning in September, right after Labor Day.
Okay.
It'll be the same 8 to 9. They're trying to get someone for the 9 o'clock slot. We'll see. I don't want to give away any hints of what they have coming up for the 9 o'clock slot. But Brady did share with me who they're trying to get. And if they did, I think it'll be a pretty good show. I think Northern Colorado listeners may find the show interesting that they're trying to replace us with. Of course, we're irreplaceable, but they have accepted the fact that we wanted to go to just 1 hour from two here in Northern Colorado. Our iTunians, you will hear a special podcast that we record more for them. The Colorado show is going to be more for Colorado people. We may have Pete on or Brandon on to talk more about Colorado estate planning issues. Justin on talking more about Colorado income tax issues. So I kind of want to port the Colorado show a little differently. That's in the future. Right now, we will continue to have a podcast for our iTunian listeners, very similar to this one, except what we'll do is you and I will answer some email questions initially until we're broadcasting live. We are working on that. When we get that all up and running, the format for iTunes will change as well. But right now, we'll answer email questions and then just replay the show for Colorado. So
perfect.
It'll still be about an hour and a half for our iTunians, but in the future, the iTunian show is going to change as well. Again, for our iTunian listeners, what we're trying to do with the show is take it to a point where you are going to be able to hear us as we record. We're going to be recording live over the internet, I guess is a good way of explaining it. Mm-hmm. We're going to use this Facebook thing, which I'm not on, but apparently Facebook Live. But also, and I thought about this all by my lonesome, and Julia is looking into it, Chris, about getting some sort of app. I know they're out there that as we're recording, we can be streaming it live just from the Retirement and IRA Show's website. No Facebook needed. Just go to the retirementandiraShow.com, listen, click the Listen Now Live button, and you'll hear us recording. And people can listen to us as we record. And call. That's the big thing. We want
that
our iTunes.
That might be even easier than Facebook, actually. But
that's what I thought. I thought, why even deal with Facebook? We got, what, 40 friends or whatever the hell they're called on Facebook? And whereas Julia said we have far more downloads from our
directly from the website.
So I said to her, why don't we just broadcast directly from the website? Okay. So she's going to ask her husband, who's some techie guy, app or program we need to do that. She says,
perfect.
Yeah, I know it can be done.
Oh, yeah.
But so what we're going to be able to do, iTunians, hopefully, I want this all up and running within September, I told her. And you, whatever you have to do, work with her, get the app. She's going to ask her husband. Mm-hmm. But our whole intent, listeners, and we're talking to our iTunian listeners now, is we want you, normally we record, it used to be every Tuesday, now, no, it used to be every Monday.
Yeah, used to be every Tuesday.
Every Tuesday. Now we're recording on Mondays. Mm-hmm. So every Monday afternoon around 2 o'clock Mountain Time, if you go to the retirementandiraShow.com, that's our radio show's website, there's going to be a Listen Live button. You can just click that, and as we're recording, you can be listening. And more importantly, you can call the show with actual questions, and you won't have to send emails. We're still welcoming emails, mm-hmm. of course, but you'll be able to call the show, talk to Chris live, talk to me live, talk to Brandon, talk to Pete, talk to Justin. All of us will be here, so we'll have estate planning attorneys, tax professional, financial planning professional, Social Security expert. That would be Chris. We'll be able to answer any questions, hopefully any questions you may have live. So I think that's going to add a neat dimension to the show.
I hope so, because that sounds like a lot of work.
Well, it sounds easy once it's up and running. I just don't know how to get it up and running. And then we have to get it through compliance. So again, the actual live show is not a problem with compliance. It's considered a public appearance, but it's the recording and making available later on iTunes itself. We still have to send to compliance and get all that approved. So that's how we're thinking of doing it. I have a September kickoff for that as well, probably more of a later September, but that's what we're hoping. So that's a little bit of housekeeping I wanted to give our listeners of what's coming.
Sounds good.
Okay, I want to begin with an email that actually came in from a South Carolinian just the other day. And it was right before I was leaving at night.
Those are the Gamecocks, right?
A what?
That's their mascot.
No.
South Carolina?
They call themselves a Gamecock?
Yeah, it's a bird.
I know it's a bird. It's
they should maybe
be like
the
Hawks or the Eagles or... I mean,
no, I'll look it up.
Does that strike the fear of death in you when you hear, I'm going to sick my Gamecock after you?
I think
you?
They're predators.
Really?
Like
a chicken hawk?
Yeah, I think so.
You sure they call
it? I'll look
South
it up while right. you read the email.
South Carolina Gamecocks. All right.
I think so.
That. All right. So, anyways, I got back a hold of him right away, Chris, because he's up against the deadline. And I wanted to make sure he did things right. And then he emailed me back and said, gee, thanks for emailing me an answer right away. And I said, no problem. We're also going to talk about it on the radio show. So he begins, hi, Jim and Chris. And this came in just Monday, August 21st. So, again, I got back to him right away because, as our listeners will see, he had a 60-day clock ticking, and I wanted him to get the money in within 60 days. So he begins, hi, Jim and Chris. I have enjoyed listening to your show for the last couple of years and was hoping to get your advice. I'm 38 years old and live in South Carolina and currently working. I left my employer in June of 2016 and did a direct rollover from my 401k. And he lists where he transferred the money. I'm not going to mention the custodian. I don't want to make it sound like we're endorsing a company or not. But he left his existing 401k, Chris, and moved it to his IRA in the fall of 2016. At the time, it looked like I took all money out of my 401k. But in July of 2017, so just last month, Chris, I received a check for $549 made out to me from the custodian of my closed 401k.
Mm.
This was a surprise to me. I did not know there was any more money in there. The actual account value was $702, but they only sent me $549 right. because the difference they sent to the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know I can't turn back the clock, but I was wondering how I should go about getting this money back into my IRA so I don't have to pay a 10% penalty and I can get those taxes back. My current IRA custodian, again, he names them, I don't want to name them. My current IRA custodian told me I can do this all as an indirect rollover and that I should actually deposit this check into my bank account and then write a new check for the full $702 to my IRA. They said this should allow me to avoid the penalty and also allow me to recoup my taxes. Should I do this, or should I just transfer the $549? Again, I want to avoid paying any penalties and taxes, if possible. Thank you, George.
That's a great question.
So he's got a couple of moving parts here.
Mm-hmm.
What concerned me is it's already mid-August, and he said he received this money in July. So let's back up a little and explain to people what's happening here. He had a 401k. He thought he removed all the money. I'm guessing one of two things happened. The paperwork to transfer the 401k originally wasn't completed properly, and some asset was not checked to be transferred.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a cash account or something. And some money was left in the 401k. Or he had a significant amount of money in the 401k. Well, it doesn't even have to be significant. Could be $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, or $300,000, $400,000, $500,000. But he had a large enough amount of money in the 401k, in a mutual fund most likely, or a series of funds, and one of the funds declared a dividend while he still had money in the 401k, but didn't pay the dividend until after he transferred all the money out of the 401k.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the more likely scenario because that happens with IRAs all the time and other accounts we transfer. And what that means, folks, is a mutual fund will declare a dividend maybe, March 1st. I'm just making that up. but they don't pay the dividend till March 15th. But if you own the fund on the dividend declared date, you will get that dividend. And then you end up closing your account or transferring the money out. Well, they still have to pay you because you owned the account on the dividend declared date. And then the money just comes in. Mm-hmm. And if your account is closed, they'll just open the account again and put it in. And that's what Fidelity... Oops. Well, now you know who he had the money with in the 401k. I guess it doesn't matter.
No.
Fidelity had the 401k. And Fidelity just did what they're going to do. They're going to send him the money.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there might be a third option.
Oh,
actually. Remember when there's people who are not vested who leave the 401k? Employer money... Vesting means you have the right to the employer's money. You get to take it with you when you leave. If you're not vested and you leave, that money doesn't go back to the employer. It gets redistributed to the remaining participants in the 401k. It's possible, if this is a really big 401k and there were significant of those. Now, $700 seems like a lot of that. So I think you're the second of your list, but I just wanted to make people aware it's possible that a few bucks could end up in your 401k. Where
that could have been it, too.
That kind of a situation.
It could have been. The only reason I'm not sure on that, though, isn't so much that it's $700. It's not if you participated in the 401k, you get some. You have to be a participant in the 401k when they make the distributions.
Right.
So if he moved his money, they're not going to track him down and say, hey, here is...
No, but if the timing, if it like came in the next day or... And it just,
if the
wasn't
timing
quite,
was just right, it might
so
have
it's
been
not,
there,
not
yes.
likely, but there's a possibility. There's another way for... I was just thinking of another way where unexplained, mysterious money could end up
appears.
In your 401k.
But either way, he ended up having $702 put into his closed 401k and then distributed. Let's talk a little bit about that. Employers have the right... to distribute money from a 401k if there is less than $5,000 in there. Now, I thought the rule was, though, if I thought it was less than 500, but maybe it's less than 1,000, they have a right to actually send you a distribution, which is what he had.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's greater than that, the employer has a right to move you out of the 401k, but they have to move you into an IRA. They just can't send you out money like this guy got. I'm guessing he's below that first hurdle, that first hurdle of either 500 or 1,000. I thought it was 500, but I could be mistaken. I know the second hurdle is 5,000. If you have more than $5,000 in a 401k, they cannot move you out of it. They have to allow you to stay in it if the 401k is still viable and open. So the reason he got his check is he was below whatever that distribution threshold is. And I thought that distribution threshold was $500. I'll have to look that up. But maybe it's as high as 1,000. Is that what you're looking up?
I'm looking up right now just in case.
Okay.
While you're talking here.
Yeah, I always thought, Chris, it was 500 was the first distribution threshold and 5,000 was the second distribution threshold. But if you're above the first threshold and below the second, they have to move you to an IRA, folks. They just can't send you the money. But in this particular case, this man did receive the money. And Fidelity, I'll let the cat out of the bag on who his 401k custodian is. Fidelity did it right.
It is less than 1,000. That's why he got a
okay.
check.
So it's not 500, it's 1,000. So that first hurdle, folks, is if you have less than 1,000 in a previous employer's 401k, they have a right to just send you a check like Fidelity did to this gentleman. If you have between 1,000 and 5,000, they have a right to move you to an IRA. But they cannot just distribute your money. They have to move it to an IRA so you don't have to pay taxes and a penalty on it. So that's why this man received $549, Chris. He had $702. They withhold 20% and send 20% to the IRS in taxes.
Mm-hmm.
He now gets a check in July for $549, and he's thinking, I don't want to pay taxes on this, and I don't want to pay a 10% penalty. And it's going to be a 10% penalty on the full $702, not the $549.
So how old was he?
38.
Oh, yeah,
so
clearly.
So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about his options and how he handles it, and then we'll move on to other things.
Perfect. So when we come back from this short break, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935 as we look back in honor of the year that Social Security started. Social Security, of course, being a significant topic of this show and our blog, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So we'll hear what song that is here after this very short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Love and kisses, never misses, making a heaven for two. With a tender, sweet surrender, coming from someone like you. Your perfection, true affection, creates a perfect design.
Ooh, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. It's a top song from 1935, the year when Social Security started here in the United States. That is Love and Kisses, performed by Ella Fitzgerald, a young Ella Fitzgerald. Her professional singing career started in 1935 at the tender age of 17 when she won an amateur talent show at the Apollo Theater. She was picked up shortly thereafter by the Chuck Webb Band, who's playing behind her on this particular song, to test for 1 week. If the audiences liked her, she could stay. They did like her, and she was hired to travel with the band for the whopping sum of $12.50 a week. She went on to win 13 Grammys and sell over 40 million albums.
That doesn't sound like much, but if we inflate that for wage inflation...
$12.50?
Yeah. I bet you it's quite a bit.
I'm sure she was pleased at 17 years old in 1935.
That's what I mean. $12.50 doesn't sound like much, but... I bet you in today's dollars, it's hundreds.
Yeah.
Of weight, because you have to increase it at wage inflation.
Oh, yeah.
So.
For sure.
All right.
So here we are. Oh, we're talking about our 60-day rollover dilemma, where the
Correct.
Person from the before the last break, they had a 401k. They left that employer, and they requested a direct rollover, where the assets are transferred directly into an IRA from the 401k. They intended to drain the whole thing. Turns out about $700 ended up being left in there for some unknown reason. And the company decided to distribute, technically the 401k custodian, decided to distribute that $700 roughly to the client in the form of 20% of it being withheld and sent to the IRS as tax withholding. The other 80%, which was about $549, showed up one day in July as a check made out to this person who we'll call George. And that is absolutely what can happen when you've separated from service and you have a very low balance in your 401k. The government says the company is not obligated to maintain that little account for you. They can either cash you out, as they did for this particular person, and that only happens forcefully if it's under $1,000. If up to $5,000, they can forcibly roll it over into an IRA in your name. But in this case, they cashed him out. Now he's wanting to avoid, he's only 38 years old and would be subject to early distribution fees, early tax penalties, a 10% penalty on this distribution of $700. So he's looking at a $70 tax penalty, as well as owing taxes on that $700. And he's trying to avoid both of those things and wants to know exactly what to do.
Perfect. That's a good little summary. And we've already spoken, and Chris has talked about it again, on how this happened, why he got the check sent to him. Let's mention the 20% automatic withholding. That was not the IRA custodian, which I've already disclosed was Fidelity. That is not Fidelity's decision. That's an actual rule. It's law. When money comes from a 401k and goes directly to the account owner, 20% must be withheld and sent to the government in tax withholding. If that was too much, you'll get it back the following year as a refund when you do your taxes. If it was too little, you'll owe more the following year when you do your taxes. But this is not Fidelity just saying, hey, we're going to send some of this money to the government in taxes. Mm-hmm. Whenever money is sent directly to the account owner, this happens. Now, it does not happen in two situations. This is going back to the trivia now. Mm-hmm. The first situation where the 20% withholding does not apply is if you do a direct rollover, which is what he did at first. He took what he thought was all the money in his 401k and moved it directly to his new IRA at a different custodian, not Fidelity. There was no taxes, no 10% penalty. There is one other instance where you may get money paid to you where you don't owe the 20% tax withholdings is sent to the government. We've talked about this. This is a very obscure one. Do you remember what it is? This is going back way to the bowels of the Retirement and IRA show.
Death?
Negative.
I'm racking my brain to think about what. Do I know it? Do I know the answer to this?
We've talked about it before. You'll recognize the answer. That is for sure.
Give me a hint. Give me a one-word hint.
Stock.
When you have employer stock in your 401k.
When employer stock is the only thing. Yeah. In a 401k. Got if it. You have employer yep. stock, cash, and this mutual
is,
funds.
This is an obscure one.
It's an obscure one.
Yep.
We do this all the time for net unrealized appreciation. Mm-hmm. How do you get just the stock out without having to pay 20% of it to the government in taxes? You transfer all money and all assets in your 401k out and tell them to leave just the company stock. If just company stock is the only thing in the 401k, you can then ask for a distribution of the stock.
Not selling it and getting
the cash.
Not
selling it in cash.
Right.
Distribute the stock to me, and they will distribute just the stock and not forcefully sell any and send 20% of it to the government in taxes.
I had forgotten that one. That is one that is from the bowels of the Retirement and IRA show. We haven't talked about that in a long time.
Because it's one of those unique strategies. So if anyone is out there trying to do NUA, net unrealized appreciation, and you're trying to do your lump sum distribution, make sure you're working with someone who knows all these rules. Because if you do it bass-ackwards, or if you took the stock first and then tried to transfer everything else out, 20% of your stock is being sold and sent to the government in taxes, and it's defeating the purpose of your NUA. So, but anyways, that's the other obscure little time where 20% withholding is not done when the only... Now, could you imagine this man thinks he moves all his assets?
Mm-hmm.
What if he was trying to do NUA, and what if this was a dividend that was paid in? So he transfers everything out, leaves just his company stock in there, mm-hmm. And just as he's trying to transfer his company stock,
$700
of a stupid dividend gets paid in. Well, now it's not just company stock. Mm-hmm. And Fidelity would have to have taken 20% of that stock distribution, sell it, send it to the government in taxes, and it would have blew up the whole NUA.
Hmm.
That's a sneaky little thing going on there.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's neither here nor there. That's what you learn on the Retirement and IRA show, these little weird nuances that so many people don't know. But anyways,
well, it's what makes retirement planning more complicated than it might appear. At first blush, a lot of this stuff sounds super simple. Oh, an IRA, you put money on, tax deferred, you take it out, now you owe taxes. End of story. Sorry, there's a lot more to the story than that. A lot more to the story that can end up costing you money.
Exactly.
You don't know the rest of the
story.
So practically every area of retirement planning has these complications because all of these things are based on rules created by, for the most part, Congress, interpreted then by the IRS or the Department of Labor or so on and so forth. So these things can get very, very complicated, and there's all these little exceptions.
It's a tough one. And this is why you and I often say, and it's not, we understand our listeners don't understand some of these rules, and that's why they listen and write to us. And by the way, anyone can write to us with an email question. Just send it to jim@jimhelps.com. That's jim@jimhelps.com. Anyways, just want to put that little thing out there so we can get some more email questions. The scariest thing in my industry, the scariest thing in retirement planning, are the advisors. They might be good-hearted people and trying really hard to help their clients, but they don't know what they don't know. And then they make a mistake and can cost people a lot of money. That's the problem. The worst thing is an advisor who doesn't know what they don't know. Most people, they know they don't know it. But there's a lot of advisors who think, oh, I know everything there is. It's just an IRA. That's easy. And then they don't know all these little nuanced rules. But anyways, so now this gentleman gets $702 paid in. Fidelity sends him $549. He receives the check in July. When, Chris, does the 60-day clock begin? When does he have to start counting 60 days?
Well, first of all, the 60-day issue. You've got to get the money back into a qualified retirement account, or you're going to owe taxes and possibly a penalty depending on your age. Right, you've got to get it into some type of qualified account, right? It could be another IRA.
Yes.
Or it could be
a 401k.
401k, those kinds of things. So when I was using the word qualified to mean qualified to receive the funds,
gotcha,
and not create this tax penalty. So that's what we're talking about, the 60-day rule. But when does the 60 days, how do you count the 60 days? And we have talked about this on the show before. If you're a longtime listener, you know it is not the day that they send the check to you. It is not the day that if you had requested it. In this case, he didn't request it because they just sent it to him. It is the day you receive the check.
The day he physically took custody of the check.
Right.
He could have been like you. What if he went to Vietnam for a month to teach economics or whatever it is you taught in Vietnam in June? The 60 days doesn't begin until he comes back and physically receives the check.
Yep.
It's from the date he receives the check. That causes so many, no, that's not true. It's from the date it was written. It's the date you requested it. No, it isn't. It's the date you physically got the check. And the thing is, who's going to know?
Yeah,
I mean,
this makes it a little fuzzy.
It makes it fuzzy. It's not the day you cashed the check. It's the day you received the check. And you're supposed to be honest and tell the IRS, I received it on this day. But how would the IRS know if you received it 4 weeks ago? I guess if you could prove to them, like you, I was out of the country for these 30 days. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a tough sale to say I never went to my mail for 4 weeks.
Right.
That would be the tougher story. But anyways, listener, it is the date you received the check. You have to count 60 days, counting Saturdays, Sundays, holidays, all of those. Within 60 days of the date you received that check, you have to get it back into an IRA or a 401k. And not just the $549, but also the 20% that was sent to the government in taxes.
Right, and this is the uncomfortable part, because you only deposited the $549 in your account, but you have to turn around and write a check for the whole $702 if you want to avoid, which is what he said in his email, George said, he wants to avoid all taxes and all penalties. He doesn't want to expose himself to either one. The only way is to have created the make the entire 702 the rollover into the IRA. One way or another, 702 came out of the 401k. 702 has got to go back into the IRA within the 60 days to avoid the penalty and the taxes.
Absolutely. So that's why I wrote to him right away, because he didn't say when he received it. He just said it was July. Well, was it July 1st or was it July 30th? How many days does this guy have left, I was thinking. Mm-hmm. So I wrote to him right away last night, answered it, and figured I would answer it on the show. Let's take this in one more direction. You know me, I love to go down these rabbit holes. What if this George, Chris, had earlier in this year taken one of his, remember, he moved his 401k to a new IRA at a new custodian to manage his own money. What if he also had an IRA and he did a 60-day rollover from that IRA to get the money into his new IRA he was opening? So in other words, he took an IRA, he closed it, he had them write him a check directly for the full dollar amount, and within 60 days, he put that money back into an IRA. That's called a 60-day IRA rollover. You're allowed to do only one per 365 days. What if he had done one in January of this year and all this happened? Would he be okay?
Yes, he would, because that applies to IRAs, not a 401k.
Exactly.
So a lot of people mix those up.
Mix them up.
They see 401ks and IRAs as essentially the same thing with the same rules. There are actually significantly different rules in a lot of cases for 401ks versus IRAs.
Exactly.
And this is one of those.
So any listener out there wondering, gee, if this ever happened to me and you've already done a 60-day IRA rollover, it doesn't matter, Chris, that he's moving the money into an IRA. What matters is that a 401k was involved. A 401k was either involved as the distributor or the receiver of the money. The one per 365-day rule does not apply to 401ks. You can do a 60-day rollover from a 401k as often as you want. It's one of those weird things, but it doesn't apply to 401ks. So even if he did one, he could still do a 60-day rollover because the money came from a 401k. Yep. If the money came from an IRA and he had already done a 60-day IRA rollover, put it into a 401k. And remember a little trick for people who have an IRA and do a 60-day rollover. And the old rule was it was not one per 365 days per taxpayer. Mm-hmm. It used to be one per 365 days per IRA. So it could be a taxpayer with three IRAs. He could do three 60-day rollovers, one from each IRA. The new rule is one per taxpayer. As Ed teaches us, Ed Slott, the IRA guru, we used to call him. Remember we called him the IRA, who was the, Amy. Amy, remember mm-hmm. Amy, the host from the radio mm-hmm. show?
Yep.
She used to call him the IRA sensei, and you called him from that Hong Kong Panda show, King Pao or Kong Pao?
What?
Yeah, you called Ed that.
No, I thought we did the David Carradine.
Professor Pao? Something Pao, wasn't he?
I don't remember now.
Who's the sensei in King?
I don't know. It's that little mouse-looking guy.
Oh, you used to have his name. Anyways, Amy used to call Ed Slott the IRA sensei. And you called him something else. I can't remember what. But anyways,
I'm sure it was hilarious, whatever it was.
This is a trick from Ed, folks. I'm trying to give them a trick from Ed. We shared this before. If you do an IRA 60-day rollover and then muff up and do another one before the 365 days is over, you're still operating under the old rules, or something like this happens to you, but it involves an IRA, not a 401k, all is not lost, folks. You can move it either to a 401k within 60 days.
If you've got one.
Mm-hmm. Or move it to a Roth IRA as a conversion. You can do unlimited 60-day rollover Roth conversions.
Right. So you won't avoid the taxes, but you'll avoid the penalty, which is really the one
But
thing
you
that-
will avoid the taxes. Because then you recharacterize it to an IRA.
Oh, yeah, if you're going to go
that's
that far.
That's Ed's trick.
Yeah, that's quite
Ed's
the trick.
Mm-hmm. Now, you'll fall victim to the step doctrine rule, so you really have to break this up. Ed recommends wait to the following tax year and recharacterize sometime before April 16th of the following year. Don't roll it into a Roth as a quote-unquote conversion on Monday, and on Tuesday recharacterize it to an IRA to avoid the taxes and 10% penalty.
That'll raise some alerts.
That would be. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was a brilliant idea Ed had.
That is brilliant.
Yeah. Okay. So anyways, I think we beat this horse to,
We're done beating this dead
horse. Thank you. We didn't beat the... No horses were harmed in the recording of this radio podcast.
That's good. That's best.
But we talked about this email enough. Okay. If anybody else out there, any iTunian, has any questions, wants to have probably a more detailed discussion of your case than you ever imagined, feel free to send us an email. Once again, you can go to our website, Jim Helps. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Click the Contact Us button or just email us, Jim at Jim Helps, and we will hopefully answer your email in a timely manner. I'm getting better on answering emails, mostly because we had that mass exodus of printed emails. Nobody knows in the office where they all went. I think they got thrown away when I was on vacation. And we're still trying to reach out to our New Hampshire listener who sent us an email. And I told you we got an email from someone in New Hampshire and that we would answer it. That email got deleted in this whole email switch thing that our server was doing. And
it's lost forever.
It's gone. So I'm hoping our New Hampshire iTunian who emailed us resends us that question, because I can't remember what it was. And you never got to put a star on the state of New Hampshire.
That's the more important thing. All these questions are great, but the most important thing is I get to put a star on the map whenever you contact us. I'm still surprised we don't have a star from Nebraska, Kansas, or Wyoming. We border those. I could throw a rock out the office really hard and maybe make it into one of those states. We're so close.
And you never got an email from them. No. Especially Wyoming. You grew up there. Don't any of you Wyomingites know you do this? They can't
Apparently
send you an
not.
Email?
Apparently not.
Your mom still lives there, right?
No, my dad.
Well, have him email you a question.
That would count?
It's cheating, but
sure.
That is
cheating. I'd rather try to get it legitimately.
For those who don't know, Chris has been trying for a couple years now to fill the United States with... We have a map of the United States. He wants to put a star on every state we get an email question from. We have well over half the states filled, but there's still many that are missing. Mm-hmm. He points out the how ironic it is that Wyoming, Nebraska, and Kansas, and you might as well throw in New Mexico and Utah.
Everybody who borders us, not a peep.
Yeah. Well, Arizona touches us right down there in the four corners.
I guess
corners.
At the point, yeah.
But we do have Arizona, but New Mexico, Utah, Wyoming, Nebraska, and Kansas. We do have Oklahoma, and that touches us in the panhandle. So there's a little bit of...
I guess.
Yeah. But the majority of states that touch Colorado have totally ignored us. And then in the Northeast, Chris is trying to finally fill the whole eastern seaboard. So he needs New Hampshire and two others, but I can't remember who.
Maine, New Hampshire, Delaware.
So those...
We've got the eastern seaboard.
So if anybody is in those states, Maine, New Hampshire, and Delaware, or in the western states of Utah, Wyoming, Nebraska, or Kansas, can you send us an email question? Even if you have to just make one up. Just tell us you're from that state, and Chris gets to put a star on it. You haven't put a star in a state in a while.
I know.
We seem to be getting all repeats from the Ohio River Valley and the whole eastern seaboard.
Mm-hmm. We get a lot from Texas.
In Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But no new ones yet.
Oh, well.
Okay. All right. So the next thing I want to talk about are inherited IRAs. We're going to get into this. Has nothing to do with an email question, just a topic that I thought people would find interesting. It came to us from Ed Slott, as always. Everybody knows I've been in the Ed Slott IRA training group for goodness, I think 7 or 8 years now. I can't remember when I joined Ed's group. And every 6 months, we go somewhere and study. We will be in Kansas City, Missouri again come October, the end of October. So we'll be flying back out to Kansas City. Next year, Chris, we will be in Philly and Coronado outside of San Diego. Maybe you want to join the group for the San Diego trip.
That sounds nice. I like San Diego.
Yeah, it was nice. Coronado was nice. We've been there before.
Mm, yeah.
SEALs train there. We went by the SEAL base, and you could hear the machine guns. So hopefully they're shooting at something where the bullets aren't flying around. But we weren't staying that far from the SEAL training base.
Interesting.
So it was interesting. In the morning when we were having breakfast, we could hear them shooting. hopefully not at us, towards our breakfast.
Yeah.
But it was neat. So, anyways, we're at the end already?
We are.
Okay.
Well, we still have two more segments, so you have time to talk about inherited IRAs.
When we come back, I'm going to share with you some of the costly mistakes people make with inherited IRAs. So I think our listeners will learn something. So many people don't know the rules, Chris, of inherited IRAs. Mm-hmm. We're going to teach them some of the rules of inherited IRAs.
Perfect. So when we get back from this short break, we're going to hear one of the top songs as we look back 40 years ago in honor of the 40 elapsed years provision of the Social Security rules and regulations. And the top song back 40 years ago, which would be back in 1977, this song continues to appear on many best of 70s hit lists. It won both a Grammy and American Music Award in 1977 and featured many elements from Earth, Wind, and Fire. So we'll find out what song that is after the short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is number one song for the second week in a row. So that is Best of My Love by The Emotions. Remain at number ones. Trying to think of some. I'm looking at some interesting fun facts about this group that I didn't share last week, but there's really nothing new. So there you go.
That was easy.
Yeah. They've got a nice connection to Earth, Wind, and Fire. That was what come from the
hymn. They sound so, a little like Earth, Wind, and Fire.
A little bit going on. They, some of the horn section in the background is the same. So it's, yeah. Perfect. 1977. Hey. Number one song. Second week in a row. I think this is the last week, though. They only had 2 weeks.
Ah.
Next week we'll have something brand new.
About time.
For sure.
Especially, is it in the next segment we still have like Eye of the Tiger playing?
Yeah. This is the last week for Eye of the Tiger.
Is it?
Yeah. So
are
we're going to play it one last time and then Bon Voyage, Eye of the Tiger, never to be heard on this show again.
You don't want to make that the new theme song?
Definitely no.
No? You
don't
think so?
That song is terrible.
Replace Our Peanuts? Isn't that called Linus and Lucy or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, technically.
Okay, well, let's get back to the task at hand. Or do you want to explain why we do all this song music stuff or wait till next segment? Do you have an update on what's new in helping with Social Security? Okay, So we'll explain in the next segment why we do all these songs. For our new listeners, there is a rhyme and a reason to why we play these songs. Okay, in the end of the last segment, I gave a little hint that we're going to talk a little bit about some mistakes people make, Chris, with inherited IRAs. Inherited IRAs, folks, are a whole different animal. I often say that, Chris, at the death of each IRA, I don't want to say owner because there's only one owner.
Beneficiary?
But beneficiary and then successor beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. As each person who somehow has something to do with that IRA dies, the rules become more and more complex, and the tax burden often becomes more and more steep. So you're being hit with more and more taxes on the IRA, and the rules become more and more complex. So we're going to talk about some general mistakes people make with inherited IRAs. And the reason people make these mistakes are the rules for inherited IRAs make the rules of a non-inherited IRA, in other words, an IRA you own and opened yourself, look easy. Mm-hmm. And anyone who listens to the show knows that the rules of even normal IRAs are not easy. So inherited IRAs just add a whole other dimension, and that dimension is death and required minimum distributions and taxes and beneficiaries. It's all rolling in. It's like a hodgepodge in a blender, and it doesn't look pretty.
No.
It's just, ugh. Okay, so one of the biggest mistakes that we see when someone initially passes away. Oh, goodness, I don't know which one to begin with. I'm trying to do this in chronological order. Let's start with incorrect account titling.
Okay.
Because when you die, not when you die, but when someone dies, and you either get a call from the attorney or an advisor, or the estate, and tell you you've just inherited some money, most people start thinking, oh, great, how do I get it? Mm-hmm. What do I do with it? And they're told they inherit an IRA. And I've seen this happen before. I won't say what company, but this person was a customer of a national firm. If you saw the name of this firm, you would say, yeah, I've heard of them. Their ads are on TV constantly, Chris. And this is years ago. I was given a presentation to a bunch of bookkeepers. I was going to say the people who do your books, bookkeepers. they had some sort of local group that met at lunch, and they asked if I would go in and talk about IRAs. And I met them, and I went in, and as they're eating, I'm talking about IRAs. And I mentioned how to title inherited IRAs, and a person in the audience raised their hand, and she said to me, she says, well, when I inherited, she inherited, it was either her mother or her father's, when I inherited my mother or my father's IRA, my advisor told me to move it into mine. And that's what she did. She moved the IRA into her own IRA. Mm-hmm. And that's the big mistake people make. They don't title the IRA. What we mean by incorrect titling is you move the IRA to your IRA. Perhaps I should have just worded it that way. You move the IRA to your own IRA. The only person who can do that is the spouse of the decedent. The spouse is allowed to move the money to their own IRA. No one else is.
Nobody else. No kids, no parents, no brothers.
And this woman at the seminar was told this by her advisor. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing it's a case of what we talked about a couple of segments ago. The worst person, I don't want to say the worst person, the most fearful thing in my book is an advisor who doesn't know what they don't know. So this advisor might have known part of the rule. A spouse can move an inherited IRA to their own IRA. What they didn't know is a non-spouse cannot move an inherited IRA to their own IRA. And this is what that woman did. And she said, what's going to happen? She had done it years earlier. And I said, well, if they find out, they being the IRS, the entire transfer into your IRA was a taxable distribution.
Mm-hmm. So first of all, taxes are owed now.
And you made a contribution in the eyes of the IRS to your IRA. And it was, I can't remember, again, this is going way far back, but it was in the five figures. So it was either $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, I think 60, for some reason, 60-ish. It wasn't 60 perfectly round number, but some number in the 60s that got moved in. So that's an excessive contribution.
Mm-hmm. It was way above the contribution limit for that time, which was probably 5,000 back then.
Mm-hmm. And every year it was in there. It's subject to an excess contribution penalty of 6% per year until you take it out. So she just had a mess. Mm-hmm. And
they just hadn't found out yet. The IRS usually takes 2-3 years before these things get discovered, and you get the ominous letter in the mail questioning Or essentially, they usually just send you a bill and they say, "This is a look. This looks like what you did. You owe us this tax. If you disagree, tell us why and give us proof."
That's called a letter audit. She said she was going to go tell her husband. They did call me. I always remember this. And I gave him all the rules. He said he was going to go talk to this person. That person's office, which was on the way home to my old home when I used to live north of Fort Collins, and I would pass it, has long since closed. And I don't think it's closed over this issue alone. But for a national office to close, you don't see these offices closing all the time. It just, none of it surprises me because he was giving bad advice, without a doubt. I don't think it closed just because of this issue, no. But probably because he may have given bad advice to other people. But one of the big things, people, is to remember, only a spouse can title an inherited IRA, essentially move the money into their own IRA. Everyone else has to move it or retitle it into an inherited IRA. And you must get, the IRS is very specific on how that titling is done. Now, fortunately, most custodians have caught on to this, and there's separate checkboxes where we indicate if this is from a decedent, if this is an inherited IRA, and the custodians are asking the correct questions. The name of the person who died, the day they died, they want the day and the year they died. Ed firmly believes in having that date in the title of the IRA. So the correct way to title in an IRA, and this is again for non-spouse beneficiaries, let's just say the guy who died is John Smith. You would title it John Smith IRA. Now let's stop right there for a minute. So many people are shocked on that. Well, it's I inherited it, Jim.
Yeah, it's now mine.
Shouldn't it be Jim Saulnier IRA? If I inherited it from John Smith? No. It's still John Smith's IRA. Mm-hmm. I'm not the owner. I'm the beneficiary. An inherited IRA is often called a beneficiary IRA in the industry. That's industry lingo. Mm-hmm. I always call them inherited IRAs.
It's almost like a trust where there's a beneficiary yeah. who's a different entity than the owner.
The owner just happens to be dead, but it's a dead guy's IRA. So let's just say I, James Saulnier, inherited an IRA from John Smith, and John and I were not married. So we're not same-sex mm-hmm. couple. We're just friends. He leaves me his money. Mm-hmm. I would title it John Smith IRA deceased. What's today?
August. Today's August 23rd.
Okay. So John Smith IRA deceased August 22nd, 2017, FBO, which stands for benefit of, so FBO, James Saulnier, beneficiary.
That's a long title.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what they're looking for.
But that's what they want. Because everything in that title they need to know is there. Who used to own it?
Who still owns it.
When he died, well, did the seed it?
Technically, yeah.
When he died?
Mm-hmm.
So they can check how long that IRA can stay open. They need that date of death. Who the current beneficiary is. So it's all right there.
Yeah.
So again, folks, it would be John Smith IRA, deceased August 22nd, 2017, IRA, FBO, for benefit of James Saulnier. Says it all right there in the title. That's how I would have to title a non-spouse IRA. Now, let's just say this was Mary Smith and Mary and I were married. I could simply have taken her IRA and moved it to my own, titled as IRA FBO James Saulnier. I could have just taken her money and moved it into my IRA if we were married. But if you are not married, you're considered a non-spouse beneficiary, you cannot move it into your own IRA, and you must title it correctly. So that's the first thing that I wanted to chat about. Second thing that kind of ties into this, Chris, ineligible rollovers. A spouse, and only a spouse, can do an indirect rollover. What we just talked about in the previous segment, a 60-day rollover. Mm-hmm. A non-spouse beneficiary cannot do a rollover.
Right.
And that's the second big mistake. Now, I will say there is an active push in Congress to remove that rule and allow non-spouse beneficiaries to do a 60-day rollover because so many of them keep muffing up.
Right.
And the reason is it's often hard to move an inherited IRA because the receiving IRA has to be titled exactly the same as if the receiving IRA is not titled exactly the same, and it wouldn't be because it's a dead person's IRA now moving into an inherited IRA, and I just gave you the title. The two titles are not matching, and it mucks up. You have to sometimes do letters of instruction and explain to the custodians what's happening. Sometimes have to send a death certificate. It starts to get to be a to-do. Well, the easiest thing is just send me the money. I'll get it into an IRA within 60 days. So non-spouse beneficiaries start doing an indirect rollover, otherwise known as a 60-day rollover. They just say, okay, close. I'm not dealing with all this. I'm trying to move it from you guys to my IRA, to a custodian where my IRA is. I want to open an inherited IRA there. The paperwork is too much. Just send me the money. I'll get it in an IRA within 60 days. They think that's allowed. It's not. And what happens is that is a mistake, Ed says, that cannot be undone. There's a lot. You mistitle an IRA, that's a mistake that can be fixed. Assuming you didn't put it in your own IRA and move it, that can't be fixed. But when you do a 60-day rollover or an indirect rollover of inherited IRA, it is a mistake you can't even apply for a private letter ruling on. They cannot, they being the IRS, cannot exempt you from the full distribution that happened. It is an incurable mistake. So you cannot do this. There is no fixing it. There's no private letter ruling. There's no pleading to the court that I didn't know. It is not fixable. It's one of those mistakes, Ed says, that's unfixable. So make sure the only people who can roll it over are spouses, because they're allowed to move it to their own IRA. But you, as a non-spouse beneficiary, are not allowed to move it to an IRA, your own IRA. So you cannot do a rollover. But recently being last year, some Congress people have introduced legislation to change this. It would not surprise me if Congress ever gets off their hinies and does something. If they do tax reform, they always call it tax reform. They would like reform it all the time. If they change the tax rules yet again, maybe they'll build in that a non-spouse beneficiary can do a 60-day rollover to an inherited IRA. Because I will tell you, it's sometimes hard. It's not hard moving the money at the existing custodian. If somebody passed away at Fidelity, and I'm just picking that out of the blue, it's easy to take an account you inherited at Fidelity and move it to a retitled, properly retitled inherited IRA at Fidelity. It's a lot more paperwork to move it from one custodian, though, to a totally new custodian. And it sometimes can be mucked up and slowed down. So the quickest way you think is just close it and take it. And then you run into these problems.
Right.
So, and that's a problem that can't be undone. If you mistitle it, if you got the dead guy's name wrong or the date of death wrong, you can change that. That's not going to blow up the IRA. You inherit a non-spouse beneficiary's IRA and take it out as a lump sum and think you got 60 days to put it into an inherited IRA. Nope, you cannot undo that mistake. And it's a full taxable distribution. Okay. Any questions, comments, or seen remarks on that?
No.
Another common mistake we see that leads to trouble, putting money into an inherited IRA.
Oh, adding money
after
you've got it. Like maybe you didn't have one before and you're thinking, well, now I've got a nice start on a on an IRA that I inherited from my Uncle Joe, and this I see what happens if you save, and I want to do that, so I'm going to start putting money in there myself. That kind of thinking.
What do you think happens when, let's just say you did everything right.
Mm-hmm.
You inherited an IRA from a non-spouse beneficiary. This, again, folks, would not be a problem for a non-spouse beneficiary because they can move the money to their own IRA. But let's just say you're a non-spouse beneficiary. You inherit an IRA. You don't do a 60-day rollover. You transfer it properly into a properly titled inherited IRA. But then you made a contribution to it. You wanted to save in an IRA, and you thought, well, I got this inherited IRA there. I'll just put it in there. Or you mistakenly put it in there. What do you think happens?
I think it's more severe than an excess contribution, because you're not allowed to make any contributions into there. I don't know. Do you give up the stretch option and you've got to take it within 5 years then, or is it worse than that?
It immediately disqualifies that IRA as an inherited IRA, and the entire IRA is deemed distributed. Because the IRS takes the point. You can only put money, follow their logic, you can only make contributions to your IRA. This is not your IRA. So if you make a contribution to a properly titled inherited IRA, you are treating it as your IRA. Since you are a non-spouse beneficiary and you're not entitled to have or move an inherited IRA to your IRA, they're going to deem it fully distributed. Can you imagine that? What if you inherited $500,000 and your advisor makes a mistake? Now, this can be appealed with a private letter ruling.
If it's not your fault.
But remember, private letter rulings are now $20,000 to apply for one. It's either $20,000 or $25,000. So this IRA had better be pretty darn big. Now, if it's $500,000 and you did everything right, but then you took your IRA contribution for the year and mistakenly put it in an inherited IRA, or worse, gave it to your advisor and they mistakenly put it into your inherited IRA, the entire inherited IRA is deemed distributed. But you could apply for a private letter ruling on that one, especially if it was the advisor who muffed up. You don't apply for a private letter ruling and say, wow, man, I didn't know the law and the rules, and this is wicked complicated, so I'd like a do-over. That's not going to work. But if you have proof to say, hey, I sent this money in, I often tell my clients in the memo field, write what it is. I personally wrote, 2018 IRA contribution. This was meant to go into my IRA, and they put it in the inherited IRA. I'd like relief. You might win, especially if the advisor owns up to it and when you apply for the private letter ruling, you do it all in writing, attaches documents saying, yeah, I muffed that one up for sure. I think the IRS would give you relief. But it's going to cost you, it's either $20,000 or $25,000. Now, they changed the PLR fees, and the PLR fees for all IRA issues now are just through the roof. So you're going to have to pay some serious cash. But if not, you're going to be faced, in my example, with a $500,000 full distribution. I think that is just one of the that's a tough rule.
The custodians,
why can't it just be an excess contribution?
Yeah, the custodians should lock the door on
and not let any money in.
Any money in, knowing this rule. But it doesn't really work that way. Custodians all the time allow
someone
to do something
make mistakes they're
not supposed
to, and it sneaks by them, and it just gets in.
True.
And then the IRS catches it a few years later. They see money going in, and they're like, wait a minute, this is an inherited. Whoa, wait, and boom, next thing you know. So you have to be careful on that one. You are not allowed to contribute to an inherited IRA. You just can't do it.
That's a scary one.
That's just, just don't make
mistakes. You scared me with that one.
You're going to have nightmares now?
Yeah, I'm going to have nightmares.
Another common mistake we see, delaying required minimum distributions. We see it in two cases. Mm-hmm. In a traditional IRA, you muff it up, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But you also see it in Roth IRAs. Because people think, oh, I inherited a Roth IRA. Roth IRAs have no required minimum distributions. But they only have no required minimum distributions for IRA owners, not IRA beneficiaries. Remember the titling. If I inherited again from John Smith, my inherited IRA is titled John Smith IRA deceased. Tells you right there, John Smith IRA, not James Saulnier. At the end it says James Saulnier beneficiary. I am not the IRA owner, I'm the beneficiary. IRA beneficiaries must take required minimum distributions unless that beneficiary is the spouse of the decedent. Then they're allowed to delay them, even as a beneficiary IRA, but not a non-spouse beneficiary. They must take them. So I'm talking more non-spouse beneficiaries here than spousal beneficiaries. Maybe we should do a whole show or two on spousal beneficiaries, because a lot of these mistakes you see are made with non-spouse beneficiaries, mm-hmm, because they confuse the rules. The IRS is, and Congress is, very lenient to spouses, not lenient to non-spouses. So when we come back, I'm going to talk about the missed RMD mistake. And then the final one is inappropriately taking the stretch. There are certain people who aren't allowed to take the stretch IRA. I'll explain who those people are and how they get into trouble too.
Excellent. So when we come back from this last break here on the Retirement IRA Show, we're going to hear a song, the top song this week, 35 years ago, as we look at the 35 computational years provision of Social Security rules. And back in 1982, the hint is this week's song may not be one of Chris's favorite songs, but many Billboard listeners voted it their favorite song from 1982, and it did win a Grammy for Best Rock and Roll Performance by a group that same year. So we'll find out who that is after this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. Even though I don't like it personally, that is a very recognizable song. Of course, for the sixth and last week, so rejoicing, at least on my part. So this is the last week that is the number one song here on the Billboard Top 10 list from 1982. And that is, of course, Eye of the Tiger by Survivor.
I thought that was Alleluia.
Well, that was celebrating the fact that Eye of the Tiger is on its last week at number one, so I don't have to listen to it anymore.
Oh, okay.
The song was also used in 1985's Rocky IV, so it was actually the theme song for Rocky III, but then they also used it in Rocky IV. Survivor also did that theme song, Burning Heart, which made it to number two on the Billboard charts. So the popularity of, I think, of those movies helped boost the song up into the top range here, but don't have to talk about Eye of the Tiger anymore. Lovely. So why do we talk about this in the first place? Well, all these songs actually have a strange connection to Social Security. The first one is fairly obvious. Social Security started in 1935, And in 19, so we listened to a top song back in 1935. And then as far as how your how your benefit is calculated for Social Security purposes, it involves two things. First, something called 40 elapsed years, which is essentially the number of years that Social Security determined would be a typical career length. Then they said, well, we need to give people a little leeway and say and admit that there's some years where they might be unemployed or underemployed or choose to go back to school or something like that. So let's only use 35 years in the computation for their benefits. So it starts with 40 elapsed years. We looked back 40 years to 1977. Then the next step in the calculation leads to the 35 computational years. Thus, we look back 35 years to 1982. Those numbers are used to get to your average indexed monthly earnings. Your AMI is what we call that. And your AMI then leads us to your PIA, which is the arguably the most important number in your Social Security benefit calculation, as the PIA, or primary insurance amount, reflects the retirement benefit you are owed at your full retirement age. So with all that, that all leads up to the update for our blog. We have a blog that focuses on Social Security issues. It's called helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, and that's how it all connects together. So we're going to get an update. What's new?
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
So this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, we actually, when I say we, I use that term loosely, I answer a question about...
you implying I don't blog enough?
Well, you know, not on the Social Security website. So on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, you will find a brand new post answering the question from a reader. And that reader actually brings up an interesting nuance to divorced spouse benefits. Many people realize that if you're married at least 10 years... you can receive divorced spouse benefits as if you were really still married to that person even after you are divorced, with a couple of additional rules attached to it. So there's quite a reward, if you will, for sticking through a marriage of 10 years. You will permanently then qualify as if you were a spouse on that person's Social Security record. Well, this person's mother was married twice to the same person. One time, married 8 years to this person. They got divorced. And 3 years later, they decided they reconciled and got remarried for 7 years. And then, unfortunately, that didn't work out and was divorced.
And they want to know if you can add them together.
They want to know if the 15 years they were married will count towards the 10 years, if that works. What do you think?
I'm going to say no, because they were divorced for three. I think if you like were to remarry within a certain period of time, maybe. But I can't see them counting something 3 years later, maybe 3 months later, half a year later.
Jim is very much on the right track. There is a limit. So it is possible to combine marriages to the same person for purposes of the 10-year rule. And it's a very specific rule. And the rule is this.
Months? Days?
Not exact as that. It is, you must be remarried by the end of the following calendar year. So it could be as much as 2 years.
Could be nearly 2 years.
As little as 1 year.
As little as 1 year, yeah.
It's got to be within, by the
end
last calendar day
of the following,
year.
So if you divorced January 1st, 2017, as long as you married by December 31st, 2018...
Then you could add them together.
That's nearly 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But if you divorce December 31st, 2017,
you could have
as little as 1 year.
Correct.
Interesting.
So 3 years. 3 years is way past that limit. So unfortunately, so this is one of those times where my answer to the person, bad news. Sorry.
Wah. Yep. So, do we have that sound effect?
No, because that's kind of rubbing salt in the wound.
Oh.
So I don't think I'd play it even if we had it. But so for kind of additional information on that topic and many others similar to that on Social Security, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, where we have a new blog post every single week answering those types of questions.
What's new, pussycat?
Interesting. That was a good question. I like getting those one-offs.
That was a one-off.
Well, I just figured the government would have some... rule on that. It,
and I was a little surprised they addressed it so directly, but clearly this happens
a lot. Yeah,
where people remarry the same person, and then there's the question of okay, and then get divorced. If they're still remarried, then it doesn't matter. If these two people were remarried, of course, then spousal benefits apply because they're married. It's only the double divorce with the marriage, two marriages to the same person.
Interesting.
Yeah, crazy.
Okay, so back to, oh, wait a minute. Do we have a wah-wah-wah-wah?
The closest I have is that.
That will have to apply because I misspoke in the previous segment. I said you could probably file a private letter ruling and undo if you had an inherited IRA and you made a contribution to it, even if it was a mistake by your advisor. Well, I looked up my Ed Slot notes just to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
You can't undo it. It's another one that cannot be undone. So if you have an inherited IRA, and again, I used in my example of $500,000, and a contribution goes into it by mistake, be it you put it in by mistake or your advisor put it in by mistake, it cannot be undone.
So the IRS isn't going to grant you relief, but this would probably be a case where you would pursue, if it was the advisor's fault, you'd pursue the advisor.
You'd pursue a lawsuit.
For causing
at least
you
for the taxes.
To have excessive taxes that you otherwise could have avoided.
Oh, yeah. I would not want to be that advisor who muffed that up.
For sure.
Oh, my God. Now you're going to give me nightmares. It can't be undone. Yeah. You just said you had a nightmare. Now I'm like, oh, my God. I'm going to have to sit staff down and tell them.
Right. Do
make not sure anyone this. Who has an inherited IRA, we do not deposit money into that IRA by mistake. God, because you just put the wrong IRA account number down.
Mm-hmm.
You's in trouble.
For sure.
But I would hope, as you just said, custodians would not allow money
would flag
into
it and question
now that
it.
It's not even repairable. They should not allow any money to go into that.
For sure. A responsible custodian will not open the door for that to even be a possibility.
In today's computer age, it would be very easy to kick that out.
One would hope, but there's other things that go on that shouldn't, that in the computer age shouldn't happen, and we see it happen.
Right.
And we, you know, we're not, that'd be too much of a tangent, but we know about it. Right now with another major custodian that they continue to do something that will cause people nightmares as far as taxes and penalties go.
You're talking about the custodian that specializes in teachers.
I am, in fact, talking about such said custodian.
Yes. We've actually named them before on this one because I was wicked angry on this. It's happened to two of my clients. And when I told you the story when I got a hold of the Ed Slot Group the first time it happened. And I never mentioned the custodian's name.
They already knew.
They did.
From the
so
description of the
So I told them the description of the problem, and he just said to me the name of the custodian. And we've named him before, but I'm not going to name him on the show today. They named him, and I said, yeah, how did you know? Mm-hmm. And his exact quote to me was, because they suck. That's what he said.
Wow.
And he went, because he has been hounding them on this, and they don't change their computer system.
Well,
anyways, you can go deep into the bowels of the Retirement Irish Show to find out what Chris and I are talking about on that one. But if you are a teacher and your custodian is that company that specializes in teachers and they are recommending you take money out over the course of the next 10 years from one of their accounts that it's an annuity account with that's restricted on distributions and just move it directly into an IRA with them.
Be very careful.
If you are approaching 70 and a half, don't do it.
Yeah. Alert, alert.
Yes, yes.
Here, how about the sound?
No, see, that should have been an alert sign.
I don't have that, though. That's the closest
you
I have.
You've got to get a bigger soundboard. In today's day and age, you've got like 5 sound effects.
I have 18 sounds on here. I can't have every possible sound.
Okay.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
I have that one.
I like that one. We don't use that enough. We used to use that with Devin when she'd look at us like that puppy you're blowing the whistle on and her head would tilt because she has no clue what we were talking about. And then you would play that. Yeah. That was classic.
That was classic.
For us. No one else could see.
We just like to enjoy our own inside jokes on the show.
Longtime listeners will know Devin used to host the show with us. And when we were more involved with KFKA at the time, and they provided Devin, who was an employee of KFKA, to co-host the show with us. Well, she wasn't a financial planner. She was clueless on all this. So as you and I would start rambling, Devin would be sitting there looking at us, and she'd tilt her head, and she just looked so cute and confused and just reminded us of puppies. So Chris used to play this. And it was funny. It was the first time we nailed her on it. It was pretty funny. Yes, memories. But, okay, back to what we were saying. What I was getting at is I said another mistake people make is delaying RMDs. Isn't that where we left off and I talked?
It is. Mm-hmm.
Did I get into how inherited Roths have RMDs? Did I get
into
that?
You mentioned they did.
But I didn't explain the rules?
No.
Ah, okay. So where people mostly make their mistakes on delaying RMDs is with Roth IRAs. A Roth IRA does not have any required minimum distributions when you are the owner. But if you inherit a Roth IRA, and again, a non-spouse, because a spouse could move an inherited Roth IRA to his or her own Roth IRA and have no RMDs. Mm-hmm. RMDs, folks, are required minimum distributions. It's the IRS and Congress want you to take money out of your IRA beginning at age 70 and a half, and they require you to take a certain amount out every year. However, no matter what your age, Chris, you could be two, could be one, and inherit your parents' Roth IRA as a one-year-old. Now, that's pushing it a little, but technically speaking, it could happen. You would be forced to take required minimum distributions because you are not the owner. You are the beneficiary. Now, here's the kicker, folks. This mistake can be fixed. If you missed RMDs, can be fixed. It's not an incurable mistake like the previous two we talked about. However, the IRS also reserves the right to charge a 50% penalty tax on missed RMDs. They don't have to grant you relief. Here's the kicker. If you took the RMD, the entire amount was 100% tax-free because it came from a Roth. If you miss it and you're hit with the penalty, half the RMD now goes to the IRS as taxes. Mm-hmm. It's a 50% penalty tax of what you were supposed to take out. So if you had a $10,000 RMD, I'm just making this up, from an inherited Roth IRA and you missed it, technically speaking, because you have to apply for relief to the IRS. So you're pretty much telling them you already muffed up. Now they have to decide if they're going to grant relief. If they say no, they'll say no, sorry, and oh, by the way, you owe us $5,000 in a penalty on the RMD you missed. It's a 50% penalty. So something that would have been 100% tax-free is now all of a sudden 50% taxable.
Excessively taxed. Yeah,
absolutely. So delaying RMDs, or I would reword it as not taking RMDs, is probably the biggest thing. Okay, so I guess I should mention, though, not just on Roth IRAs. On a non-Roth IRA, on a regular IRA, people still make mistakes on this, Chris, because they think RMDs don't have to be taken until 70 and a half. So even on a non-Roth IRA, they let the money sit in there because they think I don't have to take them. That's happened to people before that have run into us. I've helped several people by showing them what they need to do to fix that mistake. They come to me one way or another, either through the podcast or the radio show or referral or somehow, and they mention they have an inherited IRA, and somehow it comes up, and they're saying, well, they're not taking any money out of it.
Because I'm not 70 and a half
yet. Yeah, I'm not 70 and a half yet. I was like, oh, God, no. But I've helped two people, and both were given relief, but they pleaded their case as of, we honestly didn't know. And the minute we found out, we took all the money, and we are going to declare it as income this year and pay it. So that actually hurts them more because now they have a bigger amount coming out subject to taxes that could push them into a higher bracket. But none were hit with the penalty.
So if you kind of fall on your sword and bite the bullet, get it fixed immediately, that you, as soon as you find it out, sounds like they're granting a little mercy.
Correct. But not everyone is given that. Okay, the final mistake I want to get to, because I know we're running out of time, which kind of ties in. It's the sister or brother of the previous one, delaying RMDs, inappropriately taking the stretch IRA. Not everyone is entitled to the stretch IRA. The stretch IRA is, it's not really an IRA. You don't go to someone and say, I'm going to open a stretch IRA.
Right.
The stretch IRA is more of a concept. It's more of a strategy. It's the required minimum distribution rules, again, for non-spouse beneficiaries. They could apply to spousal beneficiaries, but most of the time it doesn't, because 99.9% of spouses move the IRAs
into their own.
To their own.
Yeah.
But not everyone is allowed to stretch out the IRA. What does stretch out mean? Normally, if you do things right, you're a non-spouse beneficiary, you inherit an IRA. You must begin taking required minimum distributions by December 31st of the year following the IRA owner's death. So again, I keep talking about this hypothetical John Smith that I inherited an IRA from. Let's say John Smith is real and he died this year, Chris, and I inherited his IRA. I could move his money to a properly titled inherited IRA, otherwise known as a beneficiary IRA, and I would begin to take required minimum distributions from it by December 31st of 2018, the year following the IRA owner's death. That is, if I want to take the stretch out, Chris, that is what I would do. But there's a certain class of beneficiaries who are not granted the ability to do a stretch out IRA. They must close the IRA within 5 years and take all the money out. That's called the five-year rule. Do you know who those beneficiaries are?
I wasn't listening carefully to most of what you just said. So.
I saw you looking at your phone. Was it something important?
It was distracting. I won't call it important.
Looks like a news release. Is something I need to worry about?
No.
Oh.
No, nothing happened.
Okay. The class of beneficiaries are beneficiaries who inherit an IRA through the estate or a will. So all you estate planning attorneys out there, please pay attention to what I just said, because you're leading your clients astray. How many times, Chris, I can't even begin if I got a nickel for every time someone came into my office and with estate documents, because the attorney told them to just name the estate or the will.
Right.
The beneficiary is per my last will and testament, or the beneficiary is my estate, or the estate of James Saulnier if it was me doing it. I see this all the time. Well, I think where the attorneys are muffing up is private. You have to still go for a private letter ruling. But private letter rulings are usually granted to allow the IRA to pass through the estate to ultimately the beneficiary. But the IRS takes the stance, there's no stretch out, because the beneficiary truly was the estate.
Right.
And the estate has no life expectancy.
Yep.
And neither does a will, attorneys. Are you listening? Neither does a will have a life expectancy. So what you're doing is, yes, ultimately that IRA will end up to the beneficiaries named in the will. I leave 10% to my son, 40% to my daughter, 50% to my neighbor, whatever it is. It will ultimately get there, 10% to the son, 40% to the daughter, 50% to the neighbor. But they must close that IRA within 5 years. There is no stretch out. A stretch out is when, again, back to my one-year-old example, if a one-year-old inherits an IRA, he or she is allowed to stretch it out over their remaining life expectancy. You go to the single life expectancy table, and for a one-year-old, I'm guessing it's going to be a pretty damn big number, 80-something years, I bet, and that IRA could stay open for 80-something years. It's a lot longer than 5 years. We see this constantly, listeners. People naming their estate. Now, if you have no humans, you want to leave the IRA too? It doesn't matter. Leave it to the estate, especially if ultimately it goes to a charity and not a human. Charity doesn't have to pay taxes. They're not going to keep it open. They're going to stretch it out. They're going to close it right away. Right. And they don't have to even pay taxes. So it's no problem using a will or your estate to pass an IRA on to a non-human.
Non-humans, yeah.
But if you're going to leave it to a human, don't do it through your estate. Yet attorneys do it all the time.
Yep. Well, they spend all that time putting together the will. I'm just saying, well, this one document controls everything.
Well, you know
just
what
flow
it is?
Everything
and
that.
Attorneys joked to me about it. Pete and Brandon, the two attorneys who are on our show a lot, they joke a lot, but there's some semblance of truth to it. Attorneys know it all. And I'm telling you, that's what they think. They truly think they know it all. And somehow they got into their head, you can pass it on. I'm not saying you can't pass on your IRA through an estate or through your will.
It
you
can't
can.
It's just not it's generally just a bad,
not
generally
smooth.
Good idea.
It's not easy. Right. And you don't get the stretch out. And you can lose it to probate. They're not mm-hmm. telling you that.
Right.
You're taking a non-probatable asset, an IRA, that passes by right of law, the beneficiary form, and throwing that all away and subjecting it to probate, probate costs. One attorney told me once he thinks attorneys do that because they're going to probate the estate and their bills
are
based on the size of the probatable estate. Yeah. So why not leave it to the estate?
Yeah.
Puts more money in their pocket. That was an attorney telling me that once. I don't know why attorneys do this, listeners. But I'm telling you, if your IRA beneficiary is your estate or per my last will and testament, do two things. Change the beneficiary form and change attorneys because you're doing it wrong. All right, that's
Amen.
It. I'm off that horse.
Yeah. So that music means we are at the end of another Retirement and IRA show. Thanks a lot for joining us. Best way to contact us, send us questions. We love to answer questions on here. Jim@jimhelps.com is the best way to contact us with your questions. And right now, there's not a whole lot in the queue, so we can get to your question very quickly.
Because we lost them all.
Yeah, Jim lost a couple of them. Yeah, so that brings us to the end here. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's jimhelps.com or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.